This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping the local area. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builder Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon, back into programs as we enter 2026. We're doing a number of things this week, really revolving it kind of around a New Year's reset. And a great place to start is the world and the U.S. in particular economy. And noted national economist Dr. Elliot Eisenberg came to Roseburg many years ago, and we've been talking to him ever since. Dr. Elliot, thanks for being on this afternoon.
It's a pleasure as always. Thanks, Kyle.
And he is joining us from sunny, warm Florida. Okay.
It's only 40 degrees, 30 degrees warmer than where you are. It's not much.
Well, 40 degrees would be quite a bit at this point, but that's a whole nother program. So 2026 is here. Kind of give us an overall evaluation of how the U.S. economy went in 2025.
I'd have to give it a B+. I really would. As someone told me, we don't have data for Q4, but we have data for Q1, Q2, and Q3. And Q2 and Q3 were really strong. Q1 was really bad because we were front-running tariffs and importing just tons of stuff. So we had really lousy number there, negative 0.2. But Q2 and 3 were stellar. There are some weird factors involved, and way huge artificial intelligence spending and so on. That said, you put it together, the first three quarters of the year, really looking fine. And 26 is looking okay, too. So I would say vastly outperformed expectations.
What are some of the biggest bright spots from last year?
The biggest bright spot far and away was artificial intelligence. That was the big unexpected. It keeps growing. Every year, 22, that's when AI came out. ChatGPT came out originally with 2.0 or 1.0 or whatever it was. And then it kept building and building, and we keep building more and more and more. Is it a bit unsustainable? Am I a bit nervous? Yes, but it's been very strong. The other thing that's gone very well is the stock market. And that has led to knock-on effects of terrific consumer spending, more so among the rich than the poor, but nonetheless, the stock AI spending leading to stock market growth and good earnings leading to big consumer spending. And that's generally what's driven the economy in 25.
What about the not bright spots?
The not bright spots are, well, there are a bunch of them. Manufacturing is weak. Home construction's weak. Auto sales are not doing particularly well. The bottom half of the population is struggling and defaulting on car loans. The student loans are going to start to, they're going to start taking cash from people's checking accounts and savings accounts, right, to pay the bills. There are a bunch of problems that are looming, and the biggest one is the labor market slowly and steadily weakening. Very slowly, but it's weakening. Unemployment continues to rise. It's up over a point in the last year and a half. It's going up slowly, but this is the big worry. What if AI weakens, stock market weakens, and the labor market gets worse? All right, now we've got problems on our hands. It's not my base case, but it's not something to be totally ignored either, I would say.
What about the whole area of interest rates?
Oh, wow. So we know the Fed cut rates 3 times in late 24 by a total of 1 full percentage point, a half point and 2/4 points. Then the fourth quarter of 25, they did almost the same thing again, cutting 3 times, but only 3/4 of a point, 1/4 point each time. Now they're on a wait and see mode. They're always in wait and see because there's two conflicting problems that they face right now and that they faced in all of 25: rising inflation and weakening labor markets. And if you raise or lower rates, you solve one of those problems, but you exacerbate the other one. So they're really trying to wait until they see which one's worse, which one's slowing down, which one's getting better, just some sign of one of them becoming less important. I think that in 26, the labor market will deteriorate a little bit. And as a result, the Fed will blink again and cut rates at least once, 1/4 point, if not twice. Now, that's going to help at the short end. So borrowing credit cards or auto loans will help, not homes so much. They're longer term. There, we haven't seen any movement in the 30-year mortgage to speak of in years. It's been stuck around 4, 4 and an eighth, 4.25 for a long time. So I'm suspect that we don't get much relief on the long-term interest rate side, but we get relief for short end.
What about, related to that, what about with housing? Are we ever going to get caught up on the needed units? I mean, it seems like this doesn't go away.
It doesn't go away. And I don't think it will. I hate to say I don't think it will. It would take a lot of things working together to get it. And the problem is when politicians attack the problem, all they do is attack the demand side. This is not a demand side problem. There's ample demand for housing. We don't have enough supply. It's a supply side problem. We have to get builders to build more homes and get them to build homes that are cheaper. And that's the hard part. We want them to have a nice 30-foot setback. We want an oak tree. We want a brick facade and so on and so forth. And that raises the price. And the tariffs raise the price more. And the deportations have raised the price because of a lack of labor as well. So there may be political gains for all those tariffs and stuff. Don't get me wrong here. I'm not lambasting or pushing the policy. But for the home builders, it's a real problem. So the cost of building an entry-level home is astoundingly high wherever you build it, whether it's in Brownsville, Texas, or San Francisco or Silicon Valley. And builders don't build enough. And that's the chronic problem we face. There's no end in sight of this, I'm afraid.
Does the U.S. need to look more at multifamily housing?
Sure. They need to look at multifamily. They need to look at everything. There's no silver bullet. It's a 100 points of light, is to take a quote from the late President H.W. Bush. It's let's do manufactured housing. Let's do small housing. Let's do printed housing. Let's do housing put in shipping containers. Whatever builders can dream up that's affordable, that passes the codes, they're all going to be safe, of course. It's the attractiveness that's the issue here. Do it all. Throw the kitchen sink at this problem. Build on public land, make it private, whatever. But the key thing is the governments, local and state and county governments, shouldn't be offering builders incentives of free land or free taxes or whatever. No. Let's try and make the house organically cheaper by making it smaller. That's the big deal. Or in a less desirable location, or higher density, or higher up, or whatever it is.
As we mentioned, so, yes. Interest rates a bit ago. What about the impact of a potential new Fed chair later this year?
Oh, boy, there's a lot there. So traditionally, there's not a lot of drama involving the Fed and the interest rate setting committee, the Federal Open Market Committee. But right now, there's a tremendous amount of it. First, a Chair Powell's term ends in May as chair, but his term as a governor doesn't end until early 28. So he could conceivably step down. He has to step down from being chair if Trump doesn't reappoint him, which is a foregone conclusion. But he could stay for two more years. I don't know if he will. The stress on the job might be more than he can bear, but that would add a new element. Number two, Lisa Cook, a governor on the Fed, President Trump has tried to fire her. There's a court date at the Supreme Court this month, which will determine how much leeway President Trump has to fire people from the Fed. There were already cases involving Humphrey's executor where they gave him permission to fire people from the Federal Election Committee and the Federal Nuclear Regulatory Committee and so on, but not the Fed. So we'll see what happens there. If he can fire her, that would give him another appointee. So he may be able to make his will felt by a new chair, a couple of new governors. We'll see. Now, the big question here is, if they put in a new person that cuts rates as President Trump wants, they can cut short-term rates, but I'm afraid that will raise long-term rates because fears of inflation will take off. Fears of inflation will rise and interest rates will go up. So short-term rates will come down, but long rates will go up. So be very careful what you want, what you pray for in this situation. But there's a palpable concern on the part of economists that this will boomerang negatively if they push short-term rates unnecessarily low. That right now they're 3 5/8. If they get into 3 1/8, even 2 7/8, okay, we could argue, but you don't want to get them below that. That would be, unless the economy really falls off a cliff.
Does the Fed need to be more insulated from whoever happens to be in charge in the White House?
Up until now, this really has never been an issue before. The federal governors, the seven governors of the Fed are appointed for 14-year terms, and they're staggered. So there's, you know, that no one president ever can get more than two or three people on. Then there are five voting members that are presidents of the Fed banks that are picked independently of Washington, D.C. Each bank picks their own president. So there are 12 votes, only seven controlled by Washington. It's a hard place to corral. And I think the market expectation is that no matter what happens, the independence of the Fed and the voting members, Trump's not going to get enough to do what he wants. He'll get enough to push a little bit, but not enough to get what he wants. They've already been, at the last time they cut rates in December, there were already three dissents that they didn't want to, two said they didn't want to cut, and one, President Trump's temporary appointee, wanted to cut more. So there's already a record of dissent here. So I think it'll be easy to dissent going forward if the new chair tries to push rates below what the majority of the board wants to do. They're not going to be manhandled here. It's a new world.
As we look at the economy again for 2026, where do you expect the strongest sectors to be?
Interesting. Mining is looking pretty good. Price of gold, price of silver is high, so the miners are going to do well. I think national defense spending will go up. If not the U.S., European and Japan and Australia and so on, and we'll be beneficiaries of some of that spending necessarily on NATO equipment, right? They're not going to be buying Chinese stuff, obviously, that's not compatible with NATO policy and so on. So those look like pretty good sectors. AI continues to be strong. Yeah, I'm a little nervous, but they're keeping it together so far. How this works out, I'm a little trepidatious. Consumer staples look good, obviously. But miners, and I'm a big fan. I'm also a big fan of energy. The AI blitz, if you will, construction blitz is requiring a tremendous amount of energy. So if I were, I'm not a stock market advisor and I can't give advice, but you know, if I could give advice and I were a stock market analyst, I'm not, don't sue me. I would say mining and energy are the places that look really exciting.
What about the weakest areas this year?
Again, there are a bunch of them. It's going to be consumer spending by the bottom half of the population. The saving grace here, the saving grace is the wrong way to phrase it, but as a macroeconomist, it's the rich that are driving the economy, and increasingly so. The top 10% of the economy, this is people or households earning above about $260,000 nationally. It depends from county to county, obviously, what top 10% is. They control 50% of all consumer spending. So even if the poor really start to fall off a cliff in terms of consumer spending, which is a real problem as a human being, economically, I'm a little less concerned. So this is very interesting. Manufacturing is also weak. It's been 10 months in recession and 20 the last 21. They've been really poor performing. But manufacturing is a much smaller percentage of GDP than it was 10 or 20 years ago. So these indicators, weak consumer spending among the bottom half of the population, weak manufacturing, which in the past have led to recessions, it's possible or likely they don't in this situation because of big secular changes in the economy. I'm still nervous, but less so.
With the midterm elections this year, still getting used to saying this year for 2026, do they have much impact in the economy?
I don't think they will. History clearly tells us that when one party comes into power in Washington and gets both chambers of commerce, House and Senate, they lose at least one in the midterm elections. Based on the November elections in 25, which are not exactly a perfect indicator of things by any stretch of the imagination, but nonetheless gives us insight. I'm not a political scientist. It looks like President Trump's popularity is low. It looks like the Republicans are going to lose a chamber. Democrats pick up one, maybe two. But I think what happens at that point is nothing happens for 2 years. There'll be a race to try and get something done now, maybe over the next 3 or 4 months before March or April or May. And then we're already into election season and nothing's going to happen. And then if the Democrats pick up one chamber, nothing happens for 2 years. So we're on the verge of a deep freeze politically for 2.5 years, likely.
Looking at the world economy, where are things going particularly well? Where are they going particularly poorly?
I would give it again a B plus, a pleasant surprise, a B plus. I wouldn't say it's shooting the lights out here, but it's doing well. And I think the major reason for my surprise, both domestically and internationally, has been the impact of trade, or the lack of impact of the tariffs, I would say. The tariffs are less large than we thought. When they came out on April 2nd or 9th, Liberation Day, they were in the 20s was the average number, but the real effective rate's about 13 or 14, so it's less than we expected. And they've been put out and taken back and reversed and reduced and increased and so on. So there's been a lot of hesitation, but we've managed, adapted by, in a whole bunch of ways, as has the entire globe. China's exporting more to Europe. Other countries have stepped in to step into the breach. So international trade hasn't taken the nosedive that I thought it would. Except for China, no other countries retaliated against us by imposing tariffs on our goods. Afraid of President Trump, I would imagine, has caused that to happen or not happen. So, and as a result, higher levels of trade tend to lead to better economic growth. So now, global growth also surprised to the upside.
Now, we had the Venezuela situation over the weekend. Is that going to have any long-term impact on the world or even the U.S. economy?
I'm inclined to say no. The most important and immediate impact, of course, is on energy prices. But Venezuela produced 900,000 barrels of oil a day, which is relatively small, marginally less than 1% of total supply, almost 1%. So it's not that big a player. So if it comes or goes, it doesn't really matter much. Think back to Iraq, our invasion of Iraq or Afghanistan. I mean, they may have caused political turmoil and expense and so on. And you could argue success or failure, whatever. But economically, these are small countries. Venezuela, outside of its oil, is really not an economically meaningful country in the Western Hemisphere or LATAM. So I would say no. And there's ample supply of oil. Oil prices are low, and that makes it easy to ignore them.
Dr. Elliot Eisenberg is with us. A few more minutes on Inside Douglas County. Back in the U.S., tourism taking a hit from other nations. Not as many folks are coming. What about the impact of that?
The impact of that, it depends on where you are. But if you're in Minnesota or Vermont or New Hampshire or Wisconsin or Northern Montana, Washington State, you're feeling it. The Canadians have been the ones in Florida. We feel it a lot here in Southern Florida. The Canadians have really left us. I have family in Canada. I was raised in Montreal. And the animus they have towards the U.S. is strong. It really is. They're very angry at us for treating them the way they have. And the only way they can take it out is by not coming here and not buying American products. So if you go to the stores in Canada, you'll literally see fruit and vegetables. They'll say, come from Mexico, come from the U.S., and the Canadians will buy the Mexican stuff. Everything has a ramification, I think, is the point. Now, we may argue these are good policies that President Trump is imposing. Great. But there's always, nothing is free in the world, and this is the cost. So condo prices here in Florida are really struggling. Restaurants in the Northeast and the upper Midwest, the border Canada, are struggling. And there are fewer vacationers. Yeah. Other countries, less so. You know, Europe's still down trivially and so on. It's mostly the Canadians.
What about U.S. residents traveling to other countries? Have we seen any pattern changes there?
There have been mild increases in applications for foreign passports. You know, these are still very small numbers. Are they up? They're up. Are they up by large percentages? Yes. But I may have the numbers wrong, but they're up from 10,000 to 14,000. I mean, it's tiny numbers. I think people are a little bit nervous, and they're looking for a potential escape hatch. So, yeah, my grandfather came from Portugal, so let me see if I can get a passport. I mean, that's the kind of thing that's going on right now. But no, objectively, this is not macroeconomically going to make a difference to the economy. No.
What about, here's a big question. What about the move to more of a cashless society? What's your thoughts?
You know, I'm generally in favor of it. I mean, I'll give you two sides of this. One, I'm happy because there'll be less tax evasion. I'm unhappy because big government's going to know what I'm doing a little more. And when I go into the stores and buy things they don't like, whether it's Doritos or chips or newspapers or magazines I shouldn't be looking at for one reason or another, I'm not sure I want them to know that. That's my business and not theirs. But I'm also eager to make sure that the IRS gets the money that Congress is telling us that they should be collecting. And to the extent that happens, okay. So I'm reluctantly happy, I guess, would be the best way to put it. It also depends how this is created. we want this digital currency to come through the banking system. We don't want it to come through the central bank, right? Again, that would give the government even more knowledge about our behavior, our consumer spending, and so on. Again, I'm not sure we want to do that. But if the private banking system has, you know, digital dollars, U.S. dollars, okay, I think that's probably the wave of the future 20 years from now. Look at Denmark. They stopped delivering mail as of the first of the year.
Wow, I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, they stopped. It's over. No mail.
Amazing. That's an interesting thing to think about.
This is the wave of the future, how it looks, what we do. Other countries are much more further along on this. Hopefully we're looking at what's going on in, you know, Estonia or wherever it is, China, and see how they're managing this process of digital currency. But it's important to pay attention. It will happen in one form or another. And I'm not talking about Bitcoin. I'm talking about real U.S. dollars here, eventually.
I know you're getting ready to travel around some. You do a lot of that talking to folks all over the place. What are some of the big concerns you're hearing from the business community and the folks that you talk with?
I mean, the general consensus is the one that's coming up that's really important is a Supreme Court decision that will come soon on tariffs. And are the tariffs that President imposed, some tariffs he imposed are legal, there's no question. The ones on items, so a tariff, 20% tariff on clothing or whatever it is, you know, whatever. But the tariffs by country, those ones are likely to be found illegal because the basis on which he did it, IEPA International, whatever, I forgot what it stands for, IEEPA, is probably illegal. So will the SCOTUS force a return of the money? How will this happen? Will the president try and reconstitute the tariffs in a new way, which he can do legally? There's no question about it. So there's going to be increased or not a new round of angst on tariffs will probably befall us in the not too distant future.
If people want to learn more about the economy, and you've always really stressed the importance of people really understanding it, even just at the middle class citizen level, I know you've got an email that goes out every day. How do people get connected to that?
Oh, thanks. Thanks for asking. I do. Yes. So the easiest way to get it is to text the word bow tie, because I wear bow ties when I speak. So one word, the text message is bow tie, and the phone number is 66866, 66866. And you'll be prompted for an email address, and you'll give me the email address, and you'll hear from me every day for the rest of your life. Or just go to econ70.com, econ70.com, and on my website, you'll find how to sign up as well.
All right, always good to talk with Dr. Elliot Eisenberg. Thanks for being on today.
It was a pleasure. I look forward to next time already, Kyle. Thank you.
All right, 12:30, make that 12:57. News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN, a daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. It's presented by Concrete Builder Supply. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it around and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Stay connected with local news and information. News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.